You're listening to episode 1 of Bad Penny, written and narrated by Josh Gentry. Chapter 1, Bad Penny. Well, here you are again, Penny, I think to myself. The alley is dark and wet, carpeted with damp trash. The muted illumination of a streetlight turns puddles into silver-edged pools of darkness. I shiver, but not from the cold. I check my equipment again. Aluminum vial with stopper, insulated lunch bag, needle and tubing, scalpel, syringe, specimen bags, and antiseptic wipes. No bone saw tonight. I slide the leather doctor's bag behind the dumpster, except for the vial. The glowing face of my watch tells me it is now or never. Dawn is an hour away. And in the month I have been watching him, he has never cut it this close. I remove the stopper from the vial and down the oily liquid inside in one long swallow. My heart beats faster, and my hands tremble slightly as I set the vial down in a puddle, waiting. The scar on my inner thigh begins to itch. He is at the mouth of the alley, sliding silently into it. I begin my wounded bird dance, staggering up against the wall of the alley, leaning my hot forehead against the cool brick. The dance that will bring us together, predator and prey. With a rush as of wings, he's at my side. Easy, this one. Lost our way, have we? He brushes my hair back from the side of my face. My forehead is still against the brick. Aren't you a pretty one? And he is on me, flinging me around so my back is against the wall. One arm snakes around my waist, lifting me and crushing me against him. I arch my back, bouncing my head off the brick wall. He strikes, his fangs burying themselves in my throat, tapping into the jugular. He is for the fast and furious feast. My skin catches like wildfire, pouring my heat into his cold, hard body. Waves of pleasure hold me in one long, rigid convulsion against him. I sense him feasting on my ecstasy and fear as much as my blood. My heart feels like it's beating its way out of my body. Then it begins to slow. Slower and slower. I'm getting cold. He lets me slide to the asphalt. Darkness. The pacemaker startles my heart into life. I am on the asphalt, freezing. There was something I was supposed to do. My thoughts are fat, sluggish worms. What was it? What was it, Penny? The bag. I try to crawl. So heavy. I slide forward on my belly, slithering over the vampire's corpse. Finally, my hand finds the smooth, supple leather. I haul myself to my knees and drag the bag from behind the dumpster. The tearing sound of the zipper almost breaks my eardrums. I fumble within the insulated lunch container, pull the plastic bag out, complete with hook, and hang it from the edge of the dumpster. I pull open my shirt and connect the tubing to the port in my chest. As the transfusion begins, I am shaking violently, dry, brittle bunch of twigs. When the transfusion is done, I will harvest samples for the good doctor, and then go home to sleep. Today is a miracle. It is raining when I wake. Raindrops slide down the window, more beautiful than diamonds, and worthless. I go to the refrigerator, get out the orange juice, and drink two tall glasses. It helps, but not enough. I'm as empty as a discarded plastic bag. I had rinsed off when I got back from the hit, but now I shower to clear this fog from my brain. Drops slide down my skin, entrancing me. I realize the water is off, but I don't know how long I've been standing here. Sliding my fingers over the scars on my right inner thigh, I shiver. In front of the mirror, I pull a comb haltingly through my hair. This one preferred blondes, so I'm a blonde. I've tried wigs, but I'm always afraid they will come off during the action. Scabs are already forming on the two puncture wounds in my neck. From my closet, I select one of my high-neck blouses. It's a Victorian-style white blouse with a high, starched collar that covers my entire neck. There is lace around the collar and down the front, and puffy ornamental sleeves. One twist on tradition, except for the collar and sleeves, it's sheer. I wear it over a black bra and pair it with a short black skirt. The skirt is snug at the waist but flares out, emphasizing the slimness of my legs. I pile my long hair into a messy mound, and my fancy, trampy look is complete. The shoes are sensible and black. I spend too much time on my feet. Before leaving the apartment, I pull on a light jacket so as to attract less attention until I'm at work. I take the insulated lunch container from the fridge. I'll eat when I get to work, but I'm debating grabbing coffee on the way. Time to go out into the world. Today's a miracle. I get off the elevated train in the old industrial district just south of downtown. There are a few scruffy characters waiting on the platform, but I'm the only rider who gets off. My steps echo on the metal stairs. Don't rush, Penny, but look lively, head up and alert. Happily, the good doctor's place is within a block of the stop. The damp is starting to make my clothes feel heavy, but the rain has stopped. I press the plastic button beside a featureless steel door. One long, three short, one long. Repeat. I wait, shifting the insulated lunch bag from hand to hand. Sometimes it takes a while, depending on if she's in the middle of an experiment, or whatever it is she does in there. Come on, I need to get to the bar and make some tips. The door opens, but no one is there. Every time, I look for the mechanism that opens it, but I never spot it. As I walk down the tunnel-like hallway, I can feel the moisture being sucked from my waterlogged clothes and skin. Always dry in here. Doc must have a serious dehumidifier. The temperature never varies, either, no matter what time of year. At the end of the hallway, I push through a curtain of heavy plastic strips, like they use for walk-in freezers. This is the cramped anteroom, where all the interactions take place, except for the surgeries. It contains two armchairs with the stuffing busting through the seams, a tiny side table, and a fluorescent shop light overhead. The door is like a bank vault. After slapping the palm-sized button next to it, I sit, crossing my legs and observing with clinical interest how far my skirt slides up my thighs. Breathing the strange, conditioned air, I remember our initial interview, and shiver. That is all behind us. We have a stable, working relationship. She should have no problem with my small request. The mechanical thud of the lock disengaging is followed by the soundless swinging open of the heavy door. The good doctor regards me as if I am an insect she is about to stick a pin through. She closes the door behind her. I motion to the insulated lunch bag on the side table. I don't hand it to her, because our hands might touch. She picks it up, then takes an aluminum tube from the pocket of her lab coat and sets it carefully on the table. Then she turns back towards the vault door. Aren't you going to ask me any details? Height, weight, modeling, lividity? No. I can tell what I need from the samples now. She starts to turn the dial on the vault. I sit forward on the edge of my chair. Wait. There's something I need to ask you. 4. She pauses. Something you need to ask me for, yes? Yes. She turns. I've been thinking, what happens if they don't drink enough? What if they decide to play with me before they have swallowed a fatal dose? She shrugs. Make sure they're excited enough that they don't. That's procedure. I want a second dose, injectable, that I can use as a backup. She eyes me. Planning extra kills that you don't have to share with me? No, I want a second dose in a syringe as a backup. She shakes her head. It is expensive. I don't need you wasting it. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to carry it as a backup in case the first bite fails. That's not part of my plan. Then this is your last sample. Temperature in the room drops when she smiles. She raises a finger. One, you won't quit. Your need to be bitten is too great. She raises a second finger. Two, I have gleaned perhaps all I can from these small samples. I don't need them any longer. You've learned everything? There's always more to know, isn't there? New mysteries? A functional specimen would be most helpful. Functional? I asked. Living doesn't seem the right term in this case. Living? I whistle. You want a live vamp? She licks her lips. Bring me a live vamp, as you say, and I will give you a second dose. You're nuts. I have to die and come back from the dead to kill one, and that is the easy option. Capture and transport a live vamp? Not to mention how long would you last once I got it here. Ixnay on that. Her mouth is a thin line. Then that is your final dose. Get out. As I walk back down the hallway, my hands shake and my mouth is dry. Penny, we have a problem. Thank you for listening to this episode of Bad Penny, written and narrated by Josh Gentry. Music licensed from FeslianStudios.com. For more information on Bad Penny or the author, visit www.joshgentry.com.